And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, May 21st, and about 9 o'clock. And I would suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy because there might be something that you really want to remember later. And it'd be good if you wrote down that email address, web page, maybe a URL, if you know what that is. Addresses, names, places, dates. It all makes a difference if you could do something about it. Let's start off with announcements. Starting tomorrow in Paoli, Indiana, is the 25th Anniversary Forest Council. And they will be having direct action training this year. It's Heartwood's 25th anniversary. And the direct action training will provide participants with the tools of campaign strategy and various tactics geared towards stopping the bad people from doing the bad things, like logging, coal extraction, pipelines, oil trains, the state, you know, those bad boys. Participants will learn how these skills can be used in conjunction with other campaign tactics to win. Expect lively discussions and even more hands-on experience. Pre-registration is recommended, though we're probably out of time at this point. Go to www.heartwood.org, or you could send an email to glaciersedge@riseup.net. For 25 years, Heartwood has coordinated vital campaigns for forest protection, launched dynamic new organizations, gathered activists together for education and enjoyment in beautiful places, and built a community of people across the Heartwood region to help each other protect the beautiful places that we all love. Go to www.heartwood.org. Starting tomorrow, their 25th Heartwood Anniversary Forest Council in Paoli, Indiana. Probably get more information at the webpage, www.heartwood.org. This Saturday, the California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Show up at Natural Bridges State Park. Old-timey days go hand-in-hand with saving native habitat, and I hope everyone is enjoying a pleasant and, albeit mostly rainless, spring, though we did have some rain today. Not very much. We will be revisiting this special beach park and continuing our work on removing invasive non-native ice plant from the dunes. Join us and see and hear the exciting changes. How to get to Natural Bridges State Park? Go west on Mission Street to Swift. Turn left. Go south to Delaware. Turn right. Go down to Natural Bridges. Turn left on Natural Bridges and go down near Westcliff Drive and park on the street. Don't park in the parking lot, you doofus. Walk to the park entrance and just meet beyond the entrance shack. You know how to get there. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in our parks and protected lands. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It's probably going to be sunny in the afternoon. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and that water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or you could send her an email at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net, or visit the webpage at www.cruisecnps.org. And in the big news this week, a ruptured pipeline along California dumps crude oil into the Pacific Ocean and all along the beach. In this story by John Queeley and Nadia Prupas, staff writers for Common Dreams. To see this level spill into such a sensitive and treasured environment is devastating to watch. These waters are known as the Galapagos of North America, with numerous species of endangered whales migrating through marine protected areas and off the iconic and beloved Gaviota Coast. An oil pipeline that runs along the coast of Central California broke on Tuesday, according to officials, dumping tens of thousands of gallons of crude oil onto local beaches and creating at least a four-mile slick in the Pacific Ocean. Initial estimates put the spill at about 21,000 gallons on Tuesday, but Associated Press cited a U.S. Coast Guard spokesperson on Wednesday who said that figure is likely to change after a Wednesday morning flyover to get a better sense of the spill's scope. After that flyover, the spill is now estimated to exceed 100,000 gallons. The pipeline, which runs parallel to Highway 101 near Santa Barbara, left a slick extending about 4 miles on Tuesday along Refugio State Beach, extending about 50 yards into the water, explained Petty Officer Andrea Anderson of the U.S. Coast Guard. But according to the Los Angeles Times, the rupture located along an 11-mile-long underground pipe that's part of a larger oil transport network bound for Kern County was first reported about noon after a woman at Refugio State Beach in Goleta smelled the crude's noxious fumes. Coast Guard crews stopped the leak by 3 p.m., said Coast Guard Petty Officer Andrea Anderson. But it's unclear what caused the break in the pipeline. After flowing from the pipeline, the crude pooled in a culvert before spilling into the Pacific, where it created a 4-mile-long sheen extending about 50 yards into the water. The spill now extends for over 9 miles. By late Tuesday, a thick layer of crude had begun to wash ashore, with black tar smearing the rocks as brackish tides arrived. "It's horrible," said Brett Connors, 35, a producer from Santa Monica, who said he spotted sea lions swimming in the oil slick. "You want to just jump in there and save them." The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has closed the area to fishing and shellfish harvesting. 3 oil booms have been deployed to help stop the oil spreading, but one boom has failed already. The pipeline, built in 1991 and designed to carry around 150,000 barrels of oil per day, is owned by Houston-based Plains All American Pipeline, which said in a statement that it shut down the pipe. The culvert was also blocked to prevent more oil from flowing into the ocean, the company said. But the company has been involved in other problems. As an investigation into an oil spill along California coast continued on Thursday, environmentalists describe a nightmare scenario in the area, and new details emerged about the pipeline operator's long history of generating similar disasters. California Governor Jerry Brown declared a state of emergency late Wednesday over the oil spill near Santa Barbara that may have dumped more than 105,000 gallons of crude along the coast on Tuesday morning. By Thursday afternoon, wildlife in the area, including pelicans, had been found coated in oil, according to ABC News. One bird was found dead on the beach, and 5 have been reportedly sent to rehabilitation centers. Cleanup crews shoveled pools of black sludge along the shore and towed booms into the water to fence in 2 large patches that had spread across 9 miles of the Pacific Ocean. Exactly how much oil has spilled from the pipeline that burst near Refugio State Beach is still unclear. So is the cause, Daryl Palmer, chairman and CEO of Plains All American, which operates the pipeline, told reporters Wednesday evening that the company had experienced mechanical issues before the leak, but did not elaborate. What is known, however, is that Plains All American has a history of wrecking environmental damage, or is that reeking? Well, it certainly reeks down there. Not including Tuesday's disaster, the company has been responsible for 175 spill incidents nationwide since 2006, including 11 in California, the most recent one in 2014, when 10,000 gallons of oil spilled at the Atwater Village community in Los Angeles. The company's Canadian branch, Plains Midstream Canada, also has a slew of ruptures in Alberta. This company's disturbing record highlights oil production's toxic threat to California's coast, said Miyoko Sakashita, the Oceans Program Director at the Center for Biological Diversity, who said in a statement on Thursday, every new oil project increases the risk of foul beaches and oil-soaked sea life. As the Gaviota Coast Conservancy pointed out on Wednesday, the pipeline was the only one in the county to be operating without local oversight. The Gaviota Coast is a global resource that needs to be attended to with greater respect and restraint, Gaviota Coast Conservancy President Phil McKenna said. When I saw that first image of oil oozing out of the bluffs, it was a nightmare. And the Santa Barbara-based Environmental Defense Center posited other unanswered questions, including, why was there no automatic shutoff in this relatively new pipeline, and why the early response was not more successful in halting the flow of crude oil into the fragile waters of the Santa Barbara Channel and across our precious coastline. Many environmental organizations connected the spill to the environmental dangers posed by offshore drilling in the Arctic, which recently got a federal approval. Oil pipelines and offshore fracking and drilling endanger our fragile marine ecosystems, Sakashita said on Thursday. If we've learned anything over the past 50 years, it's that coastal oil production remains inherently dangerous to wildlife, local communities, and the health of the planet. To protect our coast, we need to stop offshore drilling and fracking and quickly transition to cleaner energy sources. Dr. Chad Nelson, CEO of the Surfrider Foundation, added, sadly, once the oil is spilled, it's too late. As we are again learning in Santa Barbara, once the disaster has occurred, we can only try to minimize the damage. We need strong public response to combat special interests who are constantly pressing for more drilling along our precious coastlines. And here's the update from the Buffalo Field Campaign for this week. The buffalo endures so much and adapts so quickly to changing circumstances. On last Friday, six hazers started the day by heading straight into Yellowstone National Park to look for and again haze the buffalo they had left there last Thursday. But their mission was unsuccessful. Buffalo has started not only to resist hazing more, but to escape it more often. In the past couple of weeks, buffalo have been taking to the thick forests and willows, emerging only when they know it is safe. Tuesday morning, hazers and law enforcement arrived in force. They headed out to Highway 287 and targeted a group of 19 buffalo. It was an interesting group containing two mature bulls, a number of three-year-old bulls, a few yearlings and pregnant females, but no calves. For the first time in our history, two Forest Service law enforcement officers arrived on horseback rather than in their squad cars. The reasoning was that they can follow the haze when it leaves the road in order to observe, but the real reason they are there is to keep our patrols in check. On horseback, they can follow our patrols through the woods and fields, keeping us and our cameras back. Surely the buffalo don't care what their reasons are. As far as they are concerned, these law enforcement officers are just a couple more hazers chasing them off their chosen ground. 11 riders hazed the buffalo down Highway 287 through public land, across U.S. Highway 191, past the Duck Creek Bison Trap, and into Yellowstone National Park. The portion of the park that the hazers entered is closed to the public to protect waking grizzly bears. I'm sure the bears and all the wildlife inside this part of Yellowstone did not appreciate the stampeding horses carrying humans who were yelling and yipping at the top of their lungs. Because of the bear closure, we cannot follow, so only the agents know what the buffalo suffered on that haze. Wednesday morning, as we anticipated, the hazers headed out to the South Fork of the Madison, where a group of 15 brown buffalo and 7 newborn calves had been enjoying a long, quiet weekend. 4 hazers initiated the attack and moved in quickly. Once the haze reached the river, however, the buffalo resisted, refusing to cross. For at least half an hour, the hazers made every kind of cattleman sound you can imagine, even coming up with a few new, unimaginable new ones. Still, the buffalo refused. The agencies got even louder and 4 more hazers were called in, and the sounds they made would have embarrassed anyone listening. If it wasn't such a terrible situation, this moment would have been comical, and we did find ourselves laughing in disbelief of how utterly obnoxious these guys are. But the buffalo didn't care. They just stood right there. Stock inspector and hazer Jeff Mount decided to pull another cowboy trick, using his lariat as a whip, uncoiling it and snapping it into the buffalo's bodies. He went after one young bull who was quite annoyed with this abuse but still refused to swim the South Fork of the Madison. After a while, a calf went in, followed by her mother, and then the rest of the herd went with them. The buffalo crossed because the calf did, probably out of protection, and perhaps her mom was the matriarch of this group. Either way, they crossed, and the agents, now 9 strong with 2 additional Forest Service LEOs on horseback, followed them, wanting to push them to the Madison Arm Road. After some success in hiding last week, the buffalo took off and ran for the trees. The hazers went in after them, and then everything scattered. Buffalo split up, going in multiple directions, making the hazers work extra hard. They had a hard time finding the buffalo, and even each other. As one of our patrols followed the sounds in the trees, keeping an eye out on the tail of the agents, my patrol partner and I slowly drove the road, trying to hear where the haze was, hoping to catch it when it emerged from the woods. Other patrols were stationed at various other locations with the same purpose. All of a sudden, my partner exclaimed, "Look, here comes a buffalo up behind us." It was a pregnant buffalo, all alone, running down the middle of the road looking for her family. She flew past and kept on going. About 20 minutes later, she came back, again running at full speed, stopped to look at us, bolted off into the trees, still searching. The agents eventually found most of the buffalo and reconvened, resuming the haze of what was now 12 brown buffalo and 5 calves. They marched them down the Madison Arm Road. The operation passed through the Madison Arm Resort campground, and the campground host came out and had words with law enforcement, expressing his opposition to the haze moving through the campground. The bullies pressed the buffalo on. The little calves were clearly growing tired at this point, and the haze slowed down because they couldn't go so fast anymore. Buffalo Field Campaign board member Justine Sanchez called out to them repeatedly, "Let them rest, let them nurse," but the haze pressed on. It seemed only a matter of minutes before we would start to see the baby buffalo collapse from exhaustion and hunger. I joined Justine in calls for compassion, telling them to stop, telling them that there were no cattle here and absolutely no justifiable reason for this abuse. Again, we continued calling out for them to stop the haze. At last, one mama buffalo made a break for it down a steep cliff riddled with fallen trees. The agents tried to block her but failed, and the rest of the herd followed. The hazers pursued the buffalo down to the lakeshore and attempted to continue their march of madness. At last, we spotted a Department of Livestock truck and empty horse trailer close by and received reports from another patrol that more empty trailers were coming. The haze was halted. The exhausted buffalo stayed where they were left. Babies collapsed or nursed, and mama buffalo grazed or bedded down. We were shocked that they stopped and can only suspect that some of our words sunk in, even though compassion doesn't seem to be in their emotional repertoire. But it was over. The 11 riders rode to the empty trailers, their goal unaccomplished. Thousands of U.S. tax dollars wasted on just this day alone, used to abuse America's last wild buffalo. Today, the hazers returned for this little herd, pushing them farther east and into Yellowstone National Park. After nearly 10 miles of being forced to run yesterday, the baby buffalo were being forced to run at least another 10 today. They ran these buffalo very hard today, so hard our foot patrols couldn't keep up. But another patrol was sent in to catch the front of the haze, so at least we can document the condition of the buffalo once the harassment ends. Remember, we are not powerless, we are not helpless. We can stop this war against wild buffalo by doing three things. One, work to repeal Montana CA 81-2-120, the law that places the Montana Department of Livestock in charge of wild bison in Montana and drives every single action against them. Two, gain Endangered Species Act protection for this most important wild bison population in the world. And three, support an alternative plan that manages wild bison like wild elk in Montana. The truth is on the buffalo's side. And for more information, go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And you can check out what they need there at the Buffalo Field Campaign at their webpage, and then send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call. 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. Once again, the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Send them lots of money often. If you have any questions, go to www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And please remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And a report says that Honduras is the most dangerous country for environmental activists. In this story written by Anastasia Maloney, editing by Rosalind Russell, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Honduras is the deadliest place for environmental activists, with scores of Hondurans killed defending land rights and environment from mining, dam projects, and logging, a campaign group said on Monday. Between 2010 and 2014, 101 activists have been murdered in Honduras, the highest rate per capita of any country surveyed by a report from Global Witness. Although the overall number was the greatest in Brazil, globally, killings of environmental activists reached an average of more than two a week in 2014, up 20% from the previous year, the report said. Latin America fared worse, accounting for nearly three-quarters of the murders, with 29 deaths reported in Brazil, 25 in Colombia, and 12 in Honduras. Historically, there has been a very unequal land distribution in Latin America, which has caused conflict between local and foreign companies and communities, said Billy Kite, campaigner at Global Witness, told the Thomson Reuters Foundation. Governments in Latin America are by no means taking this problem seriously. Impunity levels are also very high, so perpetrators of crimes get away with it, he said. The report found 40% of environmental defenders killed last year were indigenous people caught on the front lines as they tried to defend their land and water sources from companies in an escalating scramble for natural resources and land. Many indigenous groups lack clear land titles to their land and suffer land grabs by powerful business interests, the report said. Honduran activist Martin Fernandez says he was forced to flee for safety to Brazil for 3 months in 2012 after he received telephone death threats and was followed by cars with black-tinted windows near his work and home. We live in fear and fear of constant attack. I and many colleagues have had to live in exile, Fernandez, head of the Movement for Dignity and Justice, a Honduran land rights group told the Thomson Reuters Foundation in a telephone interview. He said Honduran and foreign companies were exploiting indigenous lands and clearing their forests, particularly in the northern Yoro province, where the Tulipan indigenous group live, making the way for dam construction and mining projects. In its report, Global Witness said the Honduran government hoped to attract $4 billion in mining investments and recently freed up 250,000 hectares of land that's over 500,000 acres for new mining projects. With the world's highest murder rate, Honduras is struggling to contain drug-fueled gang violence and organized crime. The government did not respond to requests for comment on the Global Witness report. Heightened dangers faced by environmental activists in Honduras are likely to be raised next month at the Geneva-based United Nations Human Rights Council, where that country's rights record comes under review. And here's news from Chile. Two arson attacks on logging trucks in the province of Arauco. And this story from the Women's Coordinating Committee for a Free Walmapu, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Two arson attacks were carried out last week at various points in the Araucania region of Chile. The first took place in the Mariposas Estate, located on Chilean Highway 181 that connects the ownerships of Caracuatín with Victoria in the province of Malleco. According to police reports, the unknown suspects entered the area and lit a fire to a shed that contained logging equipment. Guards then confronted the suspects, which gave way to shots being fired, although police assert there were no injuries reported. Due to the incident, the shed, a tractor, and an excavator were completely destroyed. Meanwhile, the other incident took place in an area of Meninco on Highway 5 South at the northern exit of the Araucania region. It was there that three logging trucks and a pedestrian lookout post were burnt down, and police are investigating on the scene. Close to 20 armed hooded suspects forced out the truck drivers to complete the attack, and the fire reached the nearby lookout post, according to witnesses. During the morning hours, the provincial prosecutor, Luis Espinoza, stated that they would work with investigators and local police to search for clues in connection to two other similar incidents in the townships of Caracuatín and Victoria. The attacks were simultaneous, which provoked the arson of three trucks and a lookout pedestrian post. It was a coordinated attack, dividing themselves between the trucks and intimidating the drivers with long and short firearms, alleged the prosecutor. The local government representative of the Araucania region, Mario Gonzalez, stated that there would be charges filed against those responsible for the incidents. We are investigating the incidents with the arson of these trucks and the lookout post to come up with possible charges, stated the representative. Everyone rejects these actions that do not favor the development of the region, added Gonzalez. In the area, pamphlets related to the Mapuche land conflict were found, stating the freedom of the calling for the freedom of Mapuche political prisoner Patricio Quepul. And Native American tribes are opposed to hunting of Yellowstone area grizzlies in this story by Laura Zuckerman, editing by Daniel Wallace and Will Dunham of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Native American tribes said last Friday they oppose U.S. government plans to strip grizzly bears in the Yellowstone National Park area of federal safeguards, ultimately opening the way to sport hunting of bears in the northern Rocky Mountain states. A federal state tribal panel that oversees grizzlies in and around the park, which spans parts of Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho, said for the past 2 years, the bear population had come back from the brink of extinction and no longer needed protections under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. But tribal members of the Yellowstone Ecosystem Subcommittee have since joined with other Indian nations to demand talks with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service before it officially proposes removing bears from the area from the federal list of endangered and threatened species. James Walksalong, a tribal historic preservation officer for the Northern Cheyenne Nation in Montana, said his is one of 33 tribes that oppose handing management of the bears to three northern Rocky Mountain states where sport hunting is planned. Greg Lisinski, conservation director with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game and a member of the subcommittee, said that the dispute has taken officials by surprise. Yellowstone area bear population today is estimated to number more than 750, Lisinski said. There were as few as 136 of the massive hump-shoulder bears counted in and around a park when they were listed in 1975 as threatened, he said, adding that decades of research show the grizzlies are thriving. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 and www.freakradio.org. If you're in Moscow, Idaho, please tune in to Radio Free Moscow 90.3 KRFP on 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights for a rebroadcast. You can also hear a rebroadcast here on Free Radio 3 p.m. on Fridays. Or you could go to the website radioforall.net, and there you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First update. And you might also go to northbysouthradio.com, and they're doing a pop-up radio on a sort of random schedule. They used to be Radio Free Edmonton, but they've sort of changed their the way they're doing things. They broadcast whenever they want, and they might broadcast the Earth First Update at any time, so you better just listen in. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 and www.freakradio.org. And I invite you to tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.